The Force Field is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Listen to other great tech podcasts at www.techpodcasts.com.
From Charlotte, North Carolina, for IT service providers, it's The Force Field with Rick Savoia. And now, here is your host, Rick Savoia.
Greetings, providers. Welcome to the unofficial podcast for IT service providers, The Force Field. I am your host, Rick Savoia, and during the next half hour, we'll cover the news, views, reviews, and interviews born about the IT industry and the Force Field community. Our call-in segment is open to all listeners Saturday nights from 10:30 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern. Call 407-278-5698. That's 407-278-5698. Or you can call in via Skype at Savoia Computer if you'd like to be part of the show. There are a lot of discussions in tech forums about starting and operating a computer business. They usually encompass some aspect of running a business in a mobile environment or out of a home office. At some point, however, the topic always brings up another aspect of the business entirely: the possibility of opening up an actual storefront, or what is commonly referred to in the internet age as a brick-and-mortar store. Starting a business is one thing. Opening an actual store is another thing entirely. While there are some aspects to operating a business out of an actual storefront that are much like any other business, there is an added dimension with responsibilities, costs, and commitments that can change the way you plan and manage your business completely, and that must be considered before you rent that building or sign a lease. It's not for everyone, but is it for you? Today we're going to talk with an IT service provider who opened his own computer store, learn how he did it, and what you need to consider before making that move from working out of your house to opening a storefront of your own. But first, let's look at what's going on elsewhere in the IT industry. OnForce, a national IT service platform used by many IT techs and service companies who are also listeners of the show, suddenly and unexpectedly removed a number of techs from their forums and disabled their provider accounts in the platform December 29th. According to an email written by Allison McLaughlin, OnForce Pro Community Manager, and sent to affected service providers, the move was deemed necessary to more effectively communicate with providers who are active users of the platform. According to McLaughlin, access to the forums will be restricted to OnForce providers who either have completed a work order through the system within the last year or are new providers who have been on the platform less than a year. In addition, OnForce deactivated providers who have not accepted a work order in the last 12 months to ensure work orders created by buyers in the platform are only routed to active techs. However, further investigation by several ousted service providers found the new policy seemed to be restricted only to techs who did not actively complete work orders, but who were active and outspoken forum members, noting that a large number of service providers registered on the platform for well over a year have never accepted a work order and were still listed as active. I am one of the members active in the forum community who was removed from the forums and whose provider account was deactivated. I knew it was coming. I just didn't expect it to happen so soon. It's something they've wanted to do for a long time now, but since I abided by the rules and did nothing wrong, there was no justification for it, so they were somewhat stuck with me. The Force Field podcast was born from the OnForce forums. When I started the show, I made a commitment to OnForce that I would not use it as a soapbox to rant publicly against them about internal issues. This commitment I kept. I kept it on the belief that eventually OnForce would collaborate with the Force Field to help the techs on their platform best utilize it in order to help grow their own businesses. This was a one-sided relationship from the day the show started, and frankly, I was getting tired of towing the line. I realize that my responsibility is not to OnForce. It is to you, my fellow techs in the field. All my private rants aside, by censoring myself publicly to favor them, I have not been reporting responsibly to you. It is my responsibility as a source of news and information for tech businesses to report responsibly on everything that goes on in the industry. The concept of the force field is designed to be pro-tech, to educate and inform you, the IT service professional, for the protection of your business and for your overall success. I have, since the beginning, reported on the good and bad of every other company out there, including various national contractors and service platforms. Every company, that is, except OnForce. There has been plenty to talk about them, both good and bad, but I only promoted the good. When they sent out a press release, I posted it, blogged about it, or mentioned it on the show. When they released their OSMI report each quarter, I promoted it. All of my personal comments or concerns in disagreement or protest were kept in private venues only, either in the OnForce forums or in the private OnForce user group area in the ForceField forums at theforcefield.net. I did not disparage them publicly. Now we are at a point where events dictate techs be informed about real concerns and risks of using the platform without some protection, and that is something that needs to be communicated. I have a responsibility to report the facts and treat everyone fairly. Yet I have been reporting and commenting on other companies while OnForce was given a free pass. I was protecting them from the same public discussion and scrutiny I give everyone else. I have been doing a great disservice to the techs who trust me to provide them with the information they need to utilize platforms like OnForce profitably without getting burned. OnForce is for some, but it isn't for everyone, and everyone needs to know how it works and how it doesn't, so the ones who need it can use it, and those who don't won't be disappointed or learn the hard way, like I did. I will not use my resources to personally attack OnForce in a hateful or spiteful way. That was always the intention of the commitment I made, and I intend to keep my word. I don't, and never have, hated the platform, in spite of their past slights against me as a buyer and a provider. However, my loyalties are with my peers, not the platform. So I will not censor myself any longer. I will present the facts, report my own experiences, and offer comments and opinion as I deem necessary, albeit respectfully and responsibly so. As such, my commitment to OnForce has officially ended. And that's the news in the force field. I am very particular about what goes in the force field, and I only promote products and services that I either use myself or would use if I needed them. This week I would like to introduce you to a sponsor who I've been using myself for reliable web hosting to keep the force field online 24/7. GoDaddy.com. GoDaddy's hosting plans are bigger and better than ever with 99% uptime, free 24/7 support, and no annual commitment. If you want to make an impact online, GoDaddy.com has what you need. .com names as low as $1.99, plus world-class hosting, fast and easy website builders, and much more. Here's the best part. As a listener of the Force Field, enter the code BLU101 when you check out and save an additional 10% on your web hosting order. You want reliable web hosting at a great price? Get your piece of the internet at GoDaddy.com. Some restrictions apply, so see site for details. That's GoDaddy.com. You're listening to The Force Field, and this is the part of the show I look forward to the most, as it is the opportunity to talk to my fellow professionals in the field. If you'd like to talk, you can call me at 407-CPU-JOY-8. That's 407-278-5698, or through Skype at Savoya Computer. If you don't have Skype, simply go to the Force Field Podcast episodes page at theforcefield.net and click the Skype icon located on the right sidebar. The download is free, the call is free, and the show is free, and you can't beat free. So call in and dare to enter the Force Field. Starting a small computer business out of your home requires careful planning. Starting one in an actual storefront is something else entirely. There's a lot more to it than renting or leasing a building downtown, putting in a few fixtures, and lining up a sign. It requires careful planning, funding, and, most importantly, a long-term commitment to a part of your business that you must be prepared for and be willing to keep. Pat Palmer understands this well. Pat owns and operates The Computer Guy, a computer store located in Hampton, Iowa. This week we'll talk with Pat and learn how he opened his store. We'll discuss how he made the decision to jump from a home office to an actual storefront, the considerations he made in staffing it properly, and why a daily commitment to attendance and punctuality is vital to its success, as we begin with part one of a special six-part series on opening a computer store. And we're talking with Pat Palmer. Hi, Pat. Welcome back to the Force Field.
Oh, good to be back, Rick.
It's great to have you back. And it's been a little while since we last talked, and for those who are listening for the first time, Pat's been on the Force Field a few times in the past, such as in episode 28, where we discussed the state of the IT industry, and in episodes 37 and 38, when we talked about creating a business plan. For those listening for the first time, why don't you go ahead and tell everyone a little bit about your business?
Yeah, I run a computer store in Hampton, Iowa called The Computer Guy, and I've actually been working out of my home from starting about 1995, and was continuing with other regular full-time jobs, and then in 2006, told them to take this job and shove it, and decided to just do The Computer Guy full-time. And then in July of 2009, took the leap and moved my store from, or my shop from my basement to a downtown Hampton retail location, hired an employee, and put some retail things in the store. And we're doing business downtown in my town of about 4,200 people.
So you're pretty much in your second year of business then, right? For the storefront, I mean.
Yes, absolutely, yes. In second year, and what a learning curve, that's for sure. I wish I would have had some advice, well, some better advice or some more advice or another little bit of advice before I started everything. Everything is going well, but another little bit of nugget of advice or something like that would have certainly helped had I had somebody I could have called on or listened to on a podcast for a little bit of advice.
Well, and we're definitely going to cover that in this episode. Now, when we last had you on the show, we were talking about how creating a business plan really helped your business. And you're saying that the business is going well. Just how well is it doing these days?
Well, it's going very well. I guess when I took my business class, the fast track class from our local community college, we talked about expanding your business from your home to a retail location. I guess a couple things they didn't really cover was, if you had an employee, and we talked a little bit about paying an employee, but I really didn't realize there was as many taxes that went along with the employee situation as there are. But and that's part of the deal. Of course, you also don't realize the insurance factor and some things like that. You have to have insurance on the building and on your stuff downtown. And just a lot of little things that you may not think of when you think, gee, I want to start a business downtown, and the rent is what it is, and that's all I need to do. Because actually when I got it all said and done, the rent was probably the cheapest part of the entire business, and it's probably the most insignificant to me right now is the amount of rent I pay.
Mm-hmm. When you first started your business, you said you were working out of your home, correct?
Yeah.
And now you have an actual storefront, or what is commonly referred to in this age of virtual web-based stores as a brick and mortar.
Yeah.
Now, was having an actual store something that you always dreamed of doing, or was it something that just came along as a next step in the natural growth of your enterprise? When did you decide to actually make that leap and open your own computer store?
Actually, when I went on my own in 2006, I really didn't envision it. I thought, you know, I'm making pretty good money here as far as what I can do. My costs were relatively low. I was making a good profit margin. I think my profit margin in my house was like 75%. And I thought, there's no need for this. I can work out of my car. I can work out of my home. I can be on the road. And then it just got overwhelming. You know, everybody's got, you know, it went from more of people having one computer in the home to now they've got two or three in their network. Yep. and businesses are expanding. And businesses really are not my forte. I'll certainly, if the other guy in town or the other guy in the area wants to do a business and put up with some of those hassles, then more power to them. But I'm basically focused on the home user and the home office user, and I just got swamped. I was working 18 hours a day, wow, and that was just killing me. And so I finally said, I'm as busy as I can be. I need to take it to the next level, and I need to hire somebody who can work in the shop while I'm on the road. And so I did that after some interviews, and I had the guy picked out I wanted to hire, and we came to an agreement, and the rest is history.
And you have one employee?
Yeah, one and a half now. I do have another guy who comes in maybe one or two days a week and covers every third weekend. So I do have, one and a half guys.
So a full-timer and a part-timer, basically.
Yeah, two and a half men, as we call it.
Well, you know, there are a lot of computer techs out there that dream of opening their own computer store, and it's a common topic in a number of tech forums, and it seems there is always someone out there asking how to go about setting one up. Now, I ran my own brick-and-mortar computer store for 4 years, and I can say from my own experience that opening a storefront is serious business. It took a lot of planning, a lot of money, and a crash course in retailing. And we can talk about my own experiences with it all day, but you know, that's just one perspective. That's just my own perspective on it. Is that your experience as well, or am I really overcomplicating the issue?
No, you're dead on. And every time you add an employee, you add a headache. And my guy is top-notch, but you just have another issue when you do have an employee. You know, I've lived in this town pretty much all my life except for about 4 years. And so everybody comes in, hey, where's Pat? And, Pat always gives me a good deal. I was going to talk to Pat about getting a discount on this. You know, Kurt doesn't care. Kurt doesn't know anybody. He's not from our town. He's from 30 miles away. And really, that's to my benefit, because if it was me, I'd probably say, oh, yeah, that's right. I promise you something, mm-hmm, a discount. And Kurt says, no, this is how it is. And, Pat said I could just come in, pick my computer up and pay for it, you know, next week. No, Pat never told me anything about that. It's due today, you know. So he worked at Staples and was a very good employee and probably had as good of soft skills as he does technical skills. So he's really good with a customer. He's really good at asking questions, and he's really good at asking for the sale. You know, all he got to say is no. If they don't want something, no. But he'll ask until he gets, you know, two or three no's under his belt, and he'll continue. So that area, as a salesperson, he's really excelled in. But it's just a responsibility of another person, and sometimes that's more than some people want to handle. And some people, I know people in the neighboring town that I do compete in, they run the store themselves, and they just sit behind the counter like it's McDonald's, and they don't do any house calls, and they don't leave the store for 8 hours a day. And I think their business suffers for that, because Kurt's in the store, I'm on the road, and I always tell people, when I'm in the store, we're both losing money, mm-hmm, because there's no money being made if I'm sitting in the store and Kurt's in the store.
I see. And you know, that's a whole different topic right there. That's because that's just one aspect of running a computer store is actually manning it. I had that issue myself because I tried to run my computer store. Now, I did from time to time hire an intern to help me out with it. But for the most part, it was a one-man operation. And I had a very difficult time juggling that aspect of it because I had the on-site calls and I had to be in the store. Having an actual storefront, you know, that's not a decision you make lightly. You really have to decide, okay, where do I want to be? Do I want to just sit in the store all day and not do any on-site calls at all? Or am I going to do the on-site stuff? If you're going to do the on-site stuff, you either have to do it or you have to hire somebody to do it. If you're going to be sitting in the store all day, then you can't do any on-site calls and you have to sort of rewrite your business model around that to a point. Now, that was my own experience. Am I a little off base there? Are there people that can juggle the two of them? Because I had a tough time doing that.
No, I think you're absolutely correct. First of all, nobody's going to care about this business as much as you are. And if you don't, then you're in the wrong business. Mm-hmm. Don't expect your employee to care about as much about your business as you do. And if he's caring more about your business than you do, then maybe you ought to do something different. What we've done and what I've seen is other techs who sit in the store all day long, their hours might be 10 to 5 or something like that, and they're going to try and do house calls before 10 in the morning or after 5 at night, and then you're just kind of back to square one because you're going to be working until 8 or 9 o'clock at night, or you're going to start in the morning, and invariably, if you've got to be to work at 10 and you're at somebody's home or business doing something, there's always going to be a snafu, and you're always going to be late to work.
Yeah.
That's just how it ends up. And so you can do what you want, but that's how I have found it. And so what I do is balance. I usually go in myself about 9:30, and my store opens at 10. We close at 6, and then on Saturdays we're open 10 to 2. But that's how I line my calls up for the day. I kind of pick where I'm going, and then that's how I balance my on-force calls, too, is if I've got an on-force call maybe a little farther out of my area, well, then that's, I believe in doing a lot of jobs in the backhaul. So if I've got to drive 70 miles to do an on-force job or another contract job, I line jobs up on the way back. So it kind of takes the sting out of the mileage and the expenses there. So that's how I balance things. But I don't know what it would be like to sit in the store for 8 hours a day. I guess I had to do it when he was on vacation. I guess that was the most miserable week of my life because I knew there was people out there that weren't getting serviced, and I was the only guy to do it. I did have a part-time gal stop in once in a while that she got tired after I kept calling her Chumley, and so she didn't want to really work anymore, but she had kids, too, and it was kind of tough for her, too. But anyway, we kind of gave Chumley a bad time, but anyway, she did enjoy it, but she could only work until like 3:30 in the afternoon, and naturally about every day when she had to pick her kids up, I was somewhere and couldn't make it back by 3:30, so, you know, she had to close the store till I got back, and it was inconsistent. So that's something else you have to think of, too, is if you're going to have an employee at a storefront, you know, have a backup or a part-time guy or someone that can come in as a stopgap if you're going to be late or need some fill-in.
Well, no, I'd like to touch on that a little bit. Of course, we have a lot to cover because this is a big topic, so that's why we're going to take this in several parts here on the show. But I do want to stop for a moment and touch on this one aspect of it because I think it's very, very important in making the overall decision as to whether or not to open up a storefront. The other aspects are important, but I think this is one that's very, very critical that a lot of people don't consider, are the responsibilities. Having a store isn't just you know, I'm going to have a storefront, I'm going to sit in all day, and people are going to bring their computers in, I'm going to make a lot of money. It is a very big responsibility overall. There are a lot of things that you need to consider and plan out very carefully if you're going to have that storefront. For one thing, and you just touched on this, the punctuality factor here. Having a store, and my experience, and this is one of the areas I had a lot of trouble with when I was trying to do that and on-site work at the same time, and juggling a family as well, you can't just show up to work anytime you want, as opposed to, say, a home office. You can get up, you know, if you don't have calls till later on in the day, you can sleep in a little bit if you want to, or you can schedule the rest of your life around some of those job responsibilities. But with a storefront, you have to be there.
Yeah.
If you're going to have set hours, you have to be there at those set hours, because those are the hours you're advertising. If you're not there, that's going to really hurt your business. Am I right here?
Yes, and that's where word of mouth advertising, they always talk about, you know, that's the best form of advertising, can really hurt, because you can have your ads on the radio, a computer guy open at 10, but if the gal in town brings her computer at 5 after 10 and you're not open, you bet she's going to tell all her friends, I lugged that computer up there and he wasn't open, and I was mad, or else they'll call me. You're not open. Your guy's not here yet. Okay.
Yep.
So anyway, that's a frantic phone call. Or, you know, the help calls me at, it takes him a half hour to get to town, so he calls me at 9:15. Yeah, I don't feel good. I'm not going to come to work today. Then you've got to have a plan B in place. You've got a whole docket of calls to make sure that you've got to call them and say, hey, I will be a little late until I find somebody, you know, to do it, because the store is number one. Those hours that you've got on your door, they mean something. And they mean, you know, it's a part of a trust or a bond with your customer that says, I will be here at 10 o'clock.
That's an excellent point. And I can say that I've seen this firsthand, where I've gone to visit certain competitor shops around the area, and they wouldn't be open at the appointed times. I even had one down the street that would just show up by appointment only. Now, he had a storefront, and he had a sign in the window saying, call first by appointment only. And to me, that was, not only was it rude to the customer, so to speak, but it was also showing a lack of reliability there. And say if I was a customer, I had an emergency, and I had to get my PC right to him during normal business hours, and he wasn't there, I'm pretty much stuck. I can't rely on him.
Yeah, isn't that neat? I love those kind of competitors.
Yeah, they don't stay around very long either.
No, they don't. And the next thing you know, their building's dark, and they've got they got some stuff in the window, and then the next thing you know, the stuff in the window gets sun bleached, and it looks like it hasn't been taken care of or changed out. And that's part of the storefront too, is switching things up, you know, now and then to make it look like it's been lived in, or you've had people in to buy some stuff, or, you know, we could have the same stuff on the shelf for 2 months, but, you know, about every month we kind of switch things around to make it look like we either have new inventory in, or we've sold a few things, or something's different. And of course, inventory is a whole nother, a whole other game there, because that's a topic in itself with what you think you need to have in the store and what the customers think they want to buy. So,
we're going to touch on that too a little bit later on in the show, because that's another very important aspect, and it's a huge investment as well. What we're really looking at here at this point is when you're going to make a decision to open up your own store, you really need to look at the commitment factor. You have to be willing to make that commitment. If you're not willing to make that commitment and jump in and say, you know, I'm going to be punctual, I'm going to be there for that store, I'm going to make sure that it's up and running, or I'm going to be able to employ people who can be there. And even if you employ other people who can be there, you still need to be able to oversee that. You can't just say, here are the keys, have at it. It's obviously that's not a very wise thing to do in many cases, unless you have a partner or something. And even then, that can be a little bit of a risk sometimes. But overall, you need to have that commitment, because if you're not 110% committed to that store, to that operation, then what would you say? Would you advise against doing it altogether?
Yeah, if you can't be 100% committed to it, just stay home and run it out of your house. But what I did too was I drove around. I went especially over to eastern Iowa, and even up in northern Iowa, north of me, I interviewed a lot of my competitors, and I probably spent $300 on taking people to lunch. because I wanted to know from employees. I took Staples employees out to lunch. I took Best Buy employees out to lunch. I took my competitor, the local shop employees out to lunch. And I even took some of my competitors out to lunch just to get a feeling for what, if you had a store or if you had it to do over again, what would you do? And got a lot of good ideas, especially just this last year when I was thinking about starting another store, expanding. I took some employees out for lunch to that who had multiple stores. They work for people who had multiple stores to find out, okay, now what happens when you have two? And they pretty much said you just multiply your problems by four, or your situation by four, because that's about how it is. But I did a lot of interviews, and I know I hurt some people's feelings because I think that they thought I was going to hire them. You're not going to hire me? No, I'm just picking your brain. Here's your meal. So I had a lot of techs who were not very happy at the end of the meal. I said, well, boy, I really appreciate your time. And, oh, so you're not going to hire me? No, I hadn't planned on it. I said, I was going to take you to lunch to find out more about what work is like for you at a shop. So I had a few people that were slightly annoyed with that, but they got over it, I guess. But it was just
Are they talking to you now?
Oh, some do and some don't. But that was just my research, and you have to do your research. I know in a 45-mile radius of me, the shops and the people out of their home that I know of, there's 80 competitors I have, if you don't keep track of all of them and find out what makes them special, you know, you won't be the one that will be special. It's you're going to be left behind, but you've always got to find out what the other guys are doing or keep tabs on it. But I just wanted to find out what worked, what didn't work, and even the shop owners, who I'm friends with many of them, you know, hey, if you had it to do over again, what would you do? So the biggest complaint I heard from a couple of them is every time you have an employee, you're just training them for somebody else or for themselves. That was the biggest complaint I heard.
In our next episode, we'll continue our discussion with Pat and learn more about how he opened a store. We'll discuss the advantages of having a storefront, the disadvantages of having one, and important things to consider when renting or leasing the space to set it up, as we continue with part two of our six-part series on opening a computer store. Well, folks, our time is up. I would like to thank everyone for listening, my kids for allowing me to do this without interruptions, and my wife for just putting up with me. If you would like to comment on the program, you can email me at rick@theforcefield.net or visit our website at www.theforcefield.net. Opinions expressed are those of the hosts and guests and do not represent The Force Field, Savoia Computer, or advertisers. All music on the show is original and was written and performed by Brother Rancid and the Brand New Pygmies. Our announcer is Felix DeCat. The show is produced and distributed by Savoia Computer. For The Force Field, I'm Rick Savoia. May The Force Field be with you.